whiskey. Whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky. It makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a ceilidh and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey. There's a dram for everyone. Now whiskey is the devil, so some people say. But that's a lot of nonsense, for we're all here today. No evil thoughts among us, just out to have some play. So drink your good old whiskey and we'll chase our cares away. It's the Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a ceilidh and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Wherever Scotsmen gather, no matter where they roam, they love to get together and sing the songs of home. The mountain glens and valleys, the rivers flowing free, and always while they're singing, they've a dram or two or three. Here's to Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a ceilidh and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Marching over heather or strolling through the glen, you'll always hear the tourists say he'll aye be back again. But it isn't just the scenery or the days of auld lang syne. It's whiskey, good old whiskey, that makes our land so fine. Here's to Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a ceilidh and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram.
The damn thing.
All right, guys, we're going live. Tori just entered the house. How are you, Colonel?
Doing fine. Proud to be here.
All right.
I'm glad it's warm in here. It's a little cold out.
Yeah, a little bit. How about it, Black Dog?
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Do you have anything of any importance that you're going to communicate to us tonight?
How are you, Tori?
he was telling us a number of things.
Yeah, he's got all kinds of news. You just need to work. You know,
and we told him,
when we get on the air.
Yeah, we told him, save it. We need to talk about it. So we'll see.
I know what Tori is asking me about.
Yeah, I know.
No, I went yesterday, and I was told that the paperwork will not be available until next week.
Actually, that was not what I was asking about, but I am glad you told us.
Yes, I assume that's what you were asking about.
I just hope you don't forget what you told us earlier.
I know you've got
short-term memory.
My mind is a steel trap. It really is. It goes in and never comes out.
All right. With that in mind, we have a copy of the city ordinance for the sale of packaged alcoholic beverages.
Oh, good.
The first reading, at any rate. We also have a copy of the decision, of today's decision, January 13th, of the case of the National Federation of Independent Business and others against the Department of Labor, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which has to do with the mandate for vaccines.
Yes, I was talking about that earlier. I was telling them about that.
Well, good. Do you want to read the decision?
I can do that.
Okay, you read the decision. Okay. And here is the...
You haven't given Reaver an opportunity to go around the table.
I'm just telling you what I know is on the agenda. The next is the English Churchman, and got some very good, interesting articles there to go over. And now I will shut up. Those are the things that I know I've got. Anybody else has got anything, they can talk about it.
Well, we got a special guest coming in at 6:30.
A special guest?
Yeah.
That's good.
He's running for District 3 representative.
Did he bring his armor plate with him?
I don't know whether he will or not.
because the slings and arrows of outrageous conversation is going to be aimed right at him.
Yeah, that's true. How are you, engineer number two?
I'm good. I made it.
You're here.
Good to be here.
Engineer number one?
Well, I'm here, and I brought my Coosa County News, and we can talk about the news that doesn't exist in this paper because there's nothing in here to talk about.
What is that, like 3 pages or what?
Well, that's about right.
Yeah, I mean, there is no, well, see, if you take the advertisements and the sports out of this paper, there's 2 sheets. That's it.
I was going to say that. It looks rather thin.
And you've got more in your black box that you say never comes out than's in here.
All right, we'll be right back.
Yeah, I was kind of I really was not surprised.
At a cottage door one wintry night, as the snow lay on the ground, stood a youthful Irish soldier boy. To the mountains he was bound. His mother stood beside him, saying, "You'll win, my boy, don't fear." And with loving arms around his waist, she tied his bandolier. Goodbye, God bless you, mother dear, I hope your heart won't pain. But pray to God, your soldier boy, your son you'll see again. And when I'm out on the firing line, it will be a source of joy to know that you're a mother proud of an Irish soldier boy. When the fighting it was over and the flag of truce was raised, the leaders ordered the firing to cease. All Ireland stood amazed. His comrades came to the cottage door with a note from her pride and joy, containing news in sad detail of her Irish soldier boy. Goodbye, God bless you, mother dear, I'm dying a death so grand. From wounds received in fighting, trying to free my native land. And when I'm up in heaven above, in the land beyond the sky, you'll always be in the company of your Irish soldier boy.
June A. Ridge, 82, of Ringgold, went home to be with the Lord on Saturday, January 9th. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. on Saturday, January 22nd, at Northwest Christian Fellowship in Varnell, Georgia. Arrangements by Heritage Funeral Home and Crematory, Battlefield Parkway.
Barbara June Scoggins Inslee, 88, of Ringgold, passed away Tuesday, January the 11th, 2022. Graveside services were held at 3:30 Thursday, January 13th, at Salem Baptist Church Cemetery. Arrangements were by Wilson Funeral Home, Wallace Stewart Chapel.
Tina Nance Swanson, 77, passed away peacefully at home surrounded by family Monday, January the 10th. Memorial services were held today at 1 p.m. in the funeral home chapel with Dr. Reverend William Swanson officiating. Interment was at Anderson Memorial Gardens, Heritage Funeral Home and Crematory, Battlefield Parkway, in charge of arrangements.
Elmer Hollifield, 76, of Ringgold, passed away Monday. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, January the 14th, in the Funeral Home Chapel with Brother Larry Hollifield officiating. A tournament will follow at Mount Pisgah Cemetery. The family will receive friends from 12 to 2 on Friday at the Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Wilson Funeral Home, Wally Stewart, Chapel Ringgold.
William Prom, Lance Corporal, 3rd Marine Division, Vietnam, 9 February, 69. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity the rest of his life above and beyond the Call of Duty while serving as a machine gun squad leader for Company 1 in action against the enemy. While returning from a reconnaissance operation during Operation Taylor Common, two platoons of Company 1 came under intense automatic fire and grenade attack from a well-concealed North Vietnamese force in fortified positions. The leading element of the platoon was isolated and several Marines were wounded. Lance Corporal Prom immediately assumed command of his machine gun and began to deliver return fire. Disregarding his safety, he advanced to a position from which he could more effectively deliver covering fire while first aid was administered to the wounded men. Realizing that the enemy would soon have to be destroyed before the injured Marines could be evacuated, he again moved forward and delivered heavy volume of fire with such accuracy that he was instrumental in routing the enemy and thus permitting his men to regroup and assume their march. Shortly thereafter, the platoon again came under heavy fire, from which one man was critically wounded. Reacting instantly, he moved forward to protect his injured comrade. Unable to continue his fire because of his severe wound, he continued to advance within a few yards of the enemy position. There, standing in full view of the enemy, he accurately directed the fire of his support elements until he was mortally wounded. Inspired by his heroic actions, the Marines launched an assault that destroyed the enemy. His indomitable courage, inspiring initiative, and selfless devoting to duty upheld the highest traditions of the Marine Corps and the U.S. Naval Service. He gallantly gave his life for his country.
And as is our custom, we read from John 15:13, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And further, our toast to the departed and members of their family. And here is the toast. Eternally happy are they who find themselves face to face with their Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, today, sitting at the right hand of God the Father Almighty.
Peace be to thine.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound
that saved a wretch like me.
That saved a wretch like me.
I once was lost, but now I'm found.
I once was lost, but now I'm found.
Was blind, but now I see.
Was blind, but now
told my heart to fear.
Was grace that told my heart to fear.
And grace my fears relieved.
And grace my fears relieved.
How precious did that grace appear.
How precious did that grace appear.
The hour I first believed.
The hour I first believed.
When we've been there 10,000 years.
When we.
Shining as
God's praise.
We just as long to sing God's praise
as when we first begun.
As when we first begun.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
That saved a wretch like me.
That saved a wretch like me.
I once was lost, but now I'm found.
Was blind, but now I see.
All right, we're getting local news.
Well, I've got two papers here, and the news is so sparse. I'll start off with something that happened on Monday night. We had our January Historical Society meeting. And we had this outstanding speaker come, and
he was standing outside.
Yeah. And our WAAK was so gracious that evening that they set things up so that we could actually broadcast the meeting live on the radio, and it's also recorded. So if somebody wants to go look at the archive, they can listen to it now.
Go to the Did You Know webpage.
Right.
Okay. Well, just what day did you upload that? Because I looked like Tuesday and I couldn't find it. Was it?
It should have been up Tuesday.
Well, my wife found it. She found it. I don't know what day it was.
Good. Okay.
Anyway,
it might have been. You might have checked before it got up.
Yeah. Anyway, the Colonel was our speaker. He did a great job and told us about life in Catoosa County during World War One, and all those that did not hear his presentation missed a real treat. So
it was good. I listened to it on the radio.
Listened
to it on the radio.
How about that? Anyway, so that happened on Monday night, and then
I was going to add to that, and I mentioned the engineer number one. There were some stories about World War One that I had heard on the Clan Cayley from the colonel that got left out. And I almost got up and said, wait a minute, you left such and such out. But there's more. I'm sure there's more to come in the future.
Anyway, the colonel did a great job, and we're fortunate to have him around to give us historic information like this.
He just did it for the money.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. We give them this great big gift when they come.
Yeah.
We don't even have anything to eat anymore. Anyway, there's a flyer that comes out to most people that ends up going into the trash at most places because they run over it with their car in the middle of the driveway, and it gets wet and muddy, and then you curse the people who threw it out, and then you go pick it up and throw it in the trash.
Yep.
But anyway,
exactly.
I picked this up and looked at it, and there is, you know, you think about this little old flyer that comes out. It's called the North Georgia Community News. And I guess the Chattanooga Times Free Press is the ones that actually print it. It is so pathetic. There is an article in here titled "Green," talking about Marjorie Greene, "Ban on Twitter stems from vaccine database talk." And they have almost two full pages of just lambasting Marjorie Greene.
Wow.
It is
I wonder why a Democrat paper would lambast.
Yes. No, no. I started Greene. Reading the article, and I thought, the more I got into it, the madder I got. It is so pathetic. Anybody that would even pick up this paper and read it now, it's got to be crazy. Anyway, I'm not even going to go over what they said. It was, but it was like, who is the worst enemy that you have? okay, I'm going to write an article about them. And so that's how the article was written.
Wow.
It is. So anyway, so that was in the paper. The other paper, I opened it up and looked at it. There's not anything in here we haven't already talked about in the past. And so, I don't know if there's any local news there to talk about. There was one thing that I got in the mail. I don't know if anybody else got it. It is one of these campaign flyers that comes out. And I'm just asking a question here. Does anybody know who Representative Jody Heiss is? He's apparently running for Raffensperger's job as state secretary.
I've heard that name. I have met him before, but it's been a long time.
It's got a picture of him. I've heard the name sounds familiar, but I don't really know him. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. But he's touting Trump, and anyway, he's running for Secretary of State in the state of Georgia. And
there's somebody else that's sort of well existing state senator or state rep that's running for that position also in there.
There's two or three running, I'm sure.
Anyway, I thought y'all being
Republicans,
all good political people would know who this guy is, but apparently he's not that well known. Anyway, so Reaver, I'm almost, I'm ashamed. I don't really have a whole lot more local. Now, Black Dog, when we were, there were some things that happened in the state of Georgia this week that were pretty interesting.
Yeah.
One was the state of the Georgia Bulldogs are now the national champions.
Yeah, that was a good game, too.
Yeah, it was. So, I mean, that was one of the conflicts we had with our Historical Society meeting. But,
I couldn't imagine you not having a conflict, because I don't think anybody in Georgia or Alabama did not have the game on.
Well, the program was over long before the kickoff.
Yeah, I went to the meeting, and then before the kickoff, I got home.
They broke a 40-year losing streak.
Yeah. Was that when, was Herschel, Herschel Walker, was he part of that winning team?
Yes.
Okay. So that's why Georgia was the national champion 40 years ago.
And they should have won it the next year. I've forgotten something happened, but Herschel was, he played for a couple of years after that, and especially the next year, they should have won it then, but I've forgotten what happened.
Well, there was a curse put on them. So,
but anyway, that same day, Black Dog was telling us what happened in Atlanta.
Biden and Harris were in Atlanta, and he was pushing his voting rights bill. And he got downright angry at some points where he was pounding on the podium. And there was one person missing from him coming down to Atlanta. Stacey Abrams was nowhere to be found. And she would not say where she was and why she wasn't there. Her spokesperson said that she had there was a conflicting luncheon or something that she had to do. She had other obligations.
The president of the United States shows up in your town, and you've got a conflicting issue. And you're supposed to be.
I heard a little different story. I heard that she knew he was going to be there, and she was going to go, but she and her staff couldn't figure out how to get there.
Well, she was conflicted, you know, over his reputation.
Well, Biden is so toxic to the Democrats right now that everybody knows that if Biden campaigns with them, that's a kiss of death, because his approval ratings are down to 33% now. So.
Well, I like my explanation better.
That they couldn't find their way. Well, that could be too. That could be too. And I guess in the House in Georgia, I guess they're going to be voting on whether Buckhead can break off and be their own city. So that's coming up pretty soon. Mullis is the one that is that helped them get it onto the House.
You see, everything that Mullis does is not bad.
No, maybe. Okay, fine. 2% of what he does is good. Yeah. Okay.
I hope it happens for the people at Buckhead. I mean, I hate to see them tied to Atlanta.
No, I don't think there'd be any problem because Sandy Springs has broken away. Johns Creek has broken away, so there's no reason why Buckhead should. But now the thing about Buckhead, that's where all the money's
at. Oh, yeah, the 40% of their income is leaving.
Well, you know.
That's what happened to Lincoln when the South seceded. 80% of the revenue of the federal treasury went south on him. And so he didn't have any money. So I wonder what they're going to do.
Well, that's like downtown Atlanta. A fella shows up, gets off his horse and goes into the bank and takes 40% of all the money in Atlanta, puts it in his saddlebag, then rides out of town.
You know, they're building a new police station in Buckhead, and they're going to have 2 cops staffing it. Which is one reason why the people in Buckhead are so anxious for the House to vote on this, because, you know, they're not happy about the direction Atlanta's going in, so I wish them all the best of luck.
Yeah, well, it's dangerous.
It is.
You can hear all kinds of stories about it. Just walking around.
You take all the money from Buckhead and you spend it in the South Side, and they're getting tired of that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about what happened to the Braves. The Braves are over there on the south side of Atlanta, and all the shenanigans that went on around the game, and the people getting robbed, and all this kind of stuff. And finally, the Braves just said, "We're going." And so they went to Gwinnett County.
Well, the other thing that's going on in Atlanta is Kemp, because there is such a surplus in the budget. He is proposing giving every taxpayer in Georgia a rebate. I think it's $500 or $250, and if you file jointly, it's $500. And he also wants to give the teachers a $2,000 a year raise and other government employees a raise.
Sounds like a vote-buying scheme to me.
You think? I kind of like what...
Well, I think it's better than what they normally do with money that they have. At least he's talking about giving it back to the public.
I kind of like what the other proposal that's out there from the one who's running for governor of just eliminating the state income tax altogether.
How are you going to make up the difference?
Well, it's quite simple. We tax all those people that move in here from California to make up the difference.
No.
That will be a disincentive for them bringing their liberal ideas with them.
No, we can tax all those immigrants when they land in Atlanta at Hartsfield, and they put them on a bus, and before you put them on the bus, you say, okay, here's your tax bill for this year.
Well, you know what they do in Switzerland. If you want to be a citizen of Switzerland, they welcome you.
Yeah.
All you have to do is deposit in the Swiss Treasury $1 million, and then they will give you your passport as a Swiss citizen.
And as soon as your balance drops down below $1 million, they give you your deportation.
No. That money is paid to the treasury,
and it's not that it's your money that's deposited in a bank in Switzerland. You give the government a check for $1 million.
You give the government a check for $1 million, and they say, "We'll make you a citizen."
So, in other words, the only people that are citizens are people who are born in Switzerland and already are citizens.
Or movie stars who move to Switzerland and write them a big check. That's why I say that's what Georgia ought to do. All these movie stars that are moving to Atlanta, you can be a citizen and vote in Georgia. You just write us a check for $1 million.
So, anyway.
All right.
Anyway. We didn't have a whole lot of local here. I'm sorry, Reaver.
Well, I didn't find anything either. So I didn't. Go ahead, Black Dog. Crank up on something.
Well,
might as well talk about the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
I know Tory is looking through this right now, so I don't want to say anything because he's looking through all this. But I'll give you a nutshell, and the Supreme Court came back with a decision on the vaccine mandates. It was a split decision on the first one about OSHA having the power to enforce companies of 100 employees or more to force their employees to get vaccinated. 6-3, the Supreme Court ruled against it, stating that OSHA does not have that authority. On the second decision, the government, Supreme Court came back and said that the federal government does have the authority to force healthcare workers to get the vaccine. But Tory will go into that.
And their reasoning is because the healthcare companies that they work for accept federal money.
That and also the fact that none of the hospitals objected.
So what about a company who provide, like a drug company or a subcontractor to a hospital or somebody like that? Are they forced?
Is
this only federal?
You're going to have to ask Tory about all that.
Because, I mean, if you think about the healthcare industry in the United States, that's a big slice of the economy.
Well, I know that. I don't know what's going to happen with all these companies that have already started forcing their employees to get the vaccine mandate. Are the employees who were terminated, are they going to be allowed to get their jobs back?
Sounds to me like that's a good lawsuit if they don't.
It sure seems like it because it was an unconstitutional act.
Right.
Well, what about a company that is a private company? It's not healthcare. It's a private company that has a contract with the government. Are they going to be subjected to the mandate?
That I'm not sure. I know when Biden was talking about it originally, he was saying any healthcare provider or company that subcontracted to the healthcare industry was going to be forced. But Tory can talk about that more.
And what is that?
We're questioning whether two items. One is the healthcare industry. If you're not a hospital, you're a subcontractor to the hospital. Let's say you're
a doctor.
Let's say you pick up the garbage.
You provide the cleaning. You clean your company and your cleaners, and one of your clients is the hospital, and you send 20 people over there once a week, and they do something. And are they required to have all of their employees
vaccinated? I haven't read the order, but the executive order, nor has the court ruled on that issue, because that issue wasn't before them.
And along with that is, if you are a private company and you have a contract with the federal government, it doesn't have anything to do with health care. You're doing something else, whatever that is. Are you required to meet the mandate?
I would say no, because you're private industry. Because private industry is the one that brought the lawsuit.
Did they say that OSHA does not have the authority to enforce this, or Biden didn't have the authority to do the mandate to begin with?
Both.
I think wasn't one of the issues that the OSHA had the authority to come up with their rules themselves, and I thought that's what this said, that OSHA does not have any authority to mandate.
No, OSHA can only follow what the federal government, what Congress gives OSHA the authority to do, but Congress did not give OSHA that authority.
Okay.
Would you like to hear what the court had to say as opposed to what Black Dog had to say?
That sounds good to me.
It's more interesting.
No, the real issue is, did the court correctly agree with that Black Dog? That's the question.
Yeah, that probably did not happen.
Gee, thank you.
Probably did not happen. The application, I didn't know we were going to get into this soon, but we can. When is our guest coming in? Soon?
6:30.
And it's 5:30. So we got to get the move on here. We're going to get our topics covered. Okay. The applicants, that's the independent business people, are likely to succeed on the merits of their claim. This is before Judge Kavanaugh, when they first made an application to have a stay put on the president's order, are likely to succeed on the merits of their claim that the secretary lacked authority to impose the mandate. Administrative agencies are creatures of statute. They accordingly possess only the authority that Congress has provided. When was the last time you ever heard a statement like this being uttered from the pens of the Supreme Court. It's been a long, 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 long time since they've used that kind of language. The secretary has ordered 84 million Americans to either obtain a COVID-19 vaccine or undergo weekly medical testing at their own expense. This is no, in quotation marks, everyday exercise of federal power, close quote. It is instead a significant encroachment into the lives and health of a vast number of employees. We expect Congress to speak clearly when authorizing an agency to exercise powers of vast economic and political significance, close quote. And this is quotation from the Alabama Association of Realtors, a 2021 case. So they're using precedent to decide this. The dissent protests that we are imposing a limit found no place in the governing statute. That's the joint opinion of Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Not so. It is the text of the agency's Organic Act that repeatedly makes clear that OSHA is charged with regulating occupational hazards and the safety and health of employees. Now that's Kagan, Sotomayor, and others talking. The dissent contends that OSHA's mandate is comparable to a fire or sanitation regulation imposed by the agency. But a vaccine mandate is strikingly unlike the workplace regulation that OSHA has typically imposed. A vaccination, after all, cannot be undone at the end of the workday. Contrary to the dissent's contention, imposing a vaccine mandate on 84 million Americans is in response to a worldwide pandemic is simply not, quotation, part of what the agency was built for, end quotation. Now, I'm not going to read this whole thing, obviously. I'm skipping through. I've underlined a lot of stuff, but I'm not going to talk about all the stuff. There were 27 states. It says the central question we face today is who decides. No one doubts the COVID-19 pandemic has posed challenges for every American, or that our state, local, and national governments all have roles to play in combating the disease. The only question is whether an administrative agency in Washington, one charged with overseeing workplace safety, may mandate the vaccination or regular testing of 84 million people, or whether, as 27 states before us submit, that work belongs to state and local governments across the country and the people's elected representatives in Congress, not to a state, not to a government agency. Here is something that I just can't believe was actually quoted in this case. This is from Judge Gorsuch. I start with this court's precedent. There is one question that the state and local authorities possess considerable power to regulate public. I start with this court's precedents. There is no question that state and local authorities possess considerable power to regulate public health. They enjoy the, quotation mark, general power of governing, close quotation mark. In other words, the states have the general power of governing. And then they quote some decisions. Then the next thing is this. The federal government's power, however, are not general, but limited and divided. See McCullough versus Maryland, 1819. They quoted McCullough versus Maryland in 1819.
Yeah, they need to do more.
That's a foundation case. McCullough versus Maryland was studied by every law student in the United States. It's a foundation case that says that that the federal government has limited power, and the power is divided between the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. So that's how they arrived at the decision. That language is the thing that is unique about this decision. And wow, what does that say about what's going to happen in the abortion case? That's going to be interesting. You know, but of course they can roll over and they can decide whatever they want to.
Well, let me ask you if.
Now, the decision has already been made, am I correct?
Yeah, this is it. This is as high as it goes. They don't have another one they can go to. You know, that's the great thing about the courts. People say they want justice. No, you don't get justice. If you want justice, die and go to hell, because that's where you get justice, because we're all sinners and fall short of the glory of God. But if you want to see what the court, all a court does is end a controversy. Ultimately, when a jury renders its verdict, verdict implies it comes from a Latin word, veritas, I think is the name of it, or vera something. And it's supposed to be truth. But on the other hand, what it really does is it ends the controversy. Was it right? Was it wrong? But it ended it.
Okay, well, let me ask you, what happens if the Democrats decide, because the Supreme Court came back and said, oh, she doesn't have the authority to write their own statutes, if the Democrats, Pelosi, Schumer, say, okay, if that's the case, we are going to bring it to a vote before the House and the Senate to force OSHA to do this?
Well, you know, if they've got the votes in the House and the votes in the Senate, and of course, Biden, he'll have to ask his wife what to do, where to sign. But the...
I don't think they can get that done between now and the election.
Well,
that's a complicated thing.
Can they do it? Yes, they can do it, but then is the political will there now? I don't think the political will is there. I don't think the political will was ever there for a vaccine mandate. I think this is something that the socialists have decided to do in order to garner additional power for the bureaucrats in Washington.
I think that probably had an effect on the outcome also.
Right.
They realize the will's not there.
Yeah. Well, if it goes back to the states and the states have the ultimate authority, can an individual state mandate businesses
sure.
to... Now, if you've got a company that's based there around the country and they've got locations in a particular state and the state says...
It's another reason to move from California and New York. Take your company and move it somewhere else.
Now, what about the employees who have already been fired from these companies because they refuse to get the vaccines?
Well, they'll have to be executed.
Well, do they have any legal rights to get their jobs back?
Well, I guess if they can find a lawyer that will work pro bono for 5 years and sue and try and bring this before a jury, they might be able to get that done. But, you know, it's a matter of, to take this to the Supreme Court, there was a lot of effort went into making this happen because it's just hard to get there. So, yeah, could somebody do something about it when they got fired? They could probably find something in this order that... creates a right of action. But who's going to sue? Who's going to spend that kind of money?
I don't know if you...
Especially when there's such a small chance of winning.
Yeah, well, and if you do win, what do you get? You get your wages. You get $15,000 in wages. And it costs you $150,000 in attorney's fees.
Well, if you've got a job and you're making $100,000 a year and you said you're not going to get the vaccine and you were fired, now you're unemployed. Some of the states were not offering unemployment to people who were fired because they refused to take the vaccine. So they've got no income, so...
Yeah, well, okay, so it's $100,000. It costs you $150,000 in attorney's fees, and you get $100,000 wages. You give $100,000 to the lawyer, and you go out and you borrow $25,000 on your house or $50,000 on your house, and you also give that to the lawyer. But you won the case.
But you get your job back.
No, may not get your job back. That what they do is they just give you your money. That's the damages. They can't force somebody to employ you.
And so they can't. So they couldn't.
What force they can do is they can. That's what the damages are. You get your salary, and you might get your salary for several years.
Well, now wait a minute. If you've been quote discriminated against, then that goes beyond just wages.
That's right.
You have damages then.
That's right. Then you have damages. You're right. You got punitive damages.
Right.
You do have punitive damages. But in response to his question, my personal feeling is they're just not going to be the kind of money there to entice lawyers to sue companies who were doing their best, some of them, to comply with a presidential order. So it's going to be kind of hard to show punitive damages.
Well, you could do like they do some of these cases. I see them on TV all the time. If you've been worked for a certain kind of company and you were exposed to asbestos, please call this number.
That's right.
So you could you get a firm that is going to sue, you name them, going to sue 400 companies in the suit.
Yeah.
And then in your plaintiff in the suit is,
I mean, that's possible.
500, you know, five, not 500,000, but maybe 10,000 people.
Yeah.
And your judgment that you're asking for is, you know, 500 million. And, you know, that sort of thing could go on. And I think with that kind of money going on, you might have a chance of winning.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope somebody will do that. And then we'll get a $19 billion judgment against Microsoft and all these other liberal companies out on the left coast and make them go bankrupt. And then all those liberals will move to Georgia.
Well, you know, talking about, you had mentioned about abortion when you were talking about the case. And there's a new poll out, and 13% of Democrats believe that abortion is the most important issue going into the next election.
13%.
13% of the Democrats believe abortion is the number one issue.
Okay, that's, let me repeat that, 13%.
Yes, it's up from 1% from about 5 years ago.
Okay.
What's the number one issue?
I have no idea what it is with the Democrats.
I think it's the economy.
Yeah, I think you're so. Right, Colonel. I heard a fellow named McLaughlin on today. I don't know if you heard him, but he was talking about about the polls and what's going on. And he was talking about all these issues, and they're all important. But the big of them all is the economy.
Well, this was just Democrat voters. This wasn't voters. All voters. The number one issue is the economy. And the inflation. Nobody cares about the voting rights. That's not even in the top five.
No. But, you know, the things that are important are, and the border.
Yes.
You know, the border is real important. I forget what the other things was he said, but the economy was number one. The border was important. Needless to say, inflation going along with economy. He had two or three other items that he mentioned that were, you know, important, and Biden's on the wrong side of every one of them.
Well,
what happened at the meeting between him and the Russian guy, Putin? Didn't they have a meeting today?
They had a meeting. I didn't hear what they discussed. I know that earlier, I think it was Biden and NATO had a meeting with Putin, and Putin rejected all their demands.
Well, that don't surprise me.
So,
well, I heard Ted Cruz talking today, and he was saying if the administration doesn't change things, Russian tanks are going to be in Kiev, and the Democrats can stand around and look at themselves and say, look what you did.
Yeah, but the Democrats and the neocons, they want us in a war.
And maybe they do.
They really do. They want us in a war. They so bad they can taste it. And the Democrats are in such bad shape right now going into the 2024 election. And they know Biden's not going to win, and they know Harris isn't going to win, so they are touting who they can have as their nominee in 2024, and they have decided Hillary Clinton is their best choice because she's younger than Biden. And some of the Democrats are touting a ticket of Hillary Clinton and Liz Cheney. That is their dream ticket.
Another, we've moved off of local. I was looking around for some articles, and this one
piqued my interest. It's from a conservative website. In the title of it's written by a lady called Julie Kelly with an organization called American Greatness. And the title of the article is Federal Agencies Need to Be Deconstructed. And just one sentence from that article, it says, I think Republicans need to put together a platform quickly that they're going to run on, and the number one issue will be to clean up and reconstruct from the top down to the lowest field offices, the FBI and the DOJ. And she makes a comment, there's no part of the FBI that is salvageable. And also in the same thing, it talks about the DOJ right now is putting together an office with a whole bunch of attorneys.
Domestic terrorism.
Say again?
To combat domestic terrorism.
Yeah. I mean, it's they're putting together a big organization, and if they charge somebody with something, there is no time limit associated with it. It's not like it lasts for a year or 5 years. It could go 100 years, and they could still go and come after the person. So it's a dangerous thing. This bunch needs to be deconstructed.
And the Democrats, that's not even McCarthy on everything he was talking about that the Republicans want to do if they regain control. None of that's even in there. There's nothing about vaccine mandates. I mean, Kevin McCarthy, all he wants to do is just have...
This outfit, this organization will make the IRS look like a Sunday school picnic.
Oh, I know it will.
Because you're talking about people putting them in prison for life for doing nothing but getting on Facebook and saying they're MAGA. That's all it takes. And they decide they want to put you in prison for the rest of your life, that's where you go.
You'd say that would be a fairy story, except that there are dozens of people in prison in Washington, D.C. for the demonstration at the Capitol last year. And these people have not had a chance for a trial. They've not had an opportunity for any kind of a hearing. They're not entitled to...
They haven't had any charges brought against them.
Haven't had any charges.
And
the courts will not accept a writ of habeas corpus from these people. That is, a petition which has been a right since... what was that document that was signed at Runnymede in England? The Magna Carta. The right of habeas corpus has existed for Western civilization since Magna Carta. And they've decided that, no, you can't have the right of writ of habeas corpus.
They need to back up and do away with this ability to treat combatants from another enemy where they don't give them rights for the court and all that. They need to do away with that because they turned it around and pointed it to American citizens.
Well, it shouldn't apply to American citizens. It was intended to apply to the Taliban.
Well, sure it was.
But they managed to reconstruct the
Taliban is never going to do as much damage to the country as this bunch is going to do to the American citizens.
Not only can they've been almost a year and they haven't been brought to trial yet, but they're not only being incarcerated, they're in isolation. And that's ridiculous.
There's one fellow that he held out for a year. They put him in solitary confinement for 365 days. And finally, after 365 days, he pleaded guilty. Because he was innocent. But he pleaded guilty. And because they pleaded guilty, they reduced his sentence to like 5 years. Well, so he's going to have to serve 5 years in prison and be put in with the normal prisoners in the jail.
I mean, none of these people were charged with sedition. Most of them were charged with trespassing.
They don't want them to go before a trial, before a jury, because a jury will pardon them and send them home.
Oh, yeah.
That's what'll happen.
I mean, this is stuff that you could only imagine happening in Russia or in a central Latin American country, not in America.
Like a banana republic.
Oh, yeah. Somebody needs to tell us a funny before we take a break. I guess Tori's going
to
do it.
Well, y'all are going to have to.
You're going to dig out a
book. Do something.
We could sing.
The bride said, "I made this pudding all by myself." The husband said, "Splendid. But who helped you lift it out of the oven?"
Romeo and Don Juan, like Sean Connery as James Bond. Get all the girls if you listen to me. Put that Scottish kilt upon your bunny knee. Put a bonnet on your head, a kilt on your knees. She's gonna say that you look sexy. You'll turn the head to make hearts melt. All the girls will scream, real men wear kilts. Men wear kilts. Yo, yo, lads, come and listen to me. I got the secret of female ecstasy. Don't be scared and don't be shy. Watch the girls stare as you walk by. Put a bonnet on your head, a kilt on your knees. Gonna say that you look sexy. You'll turn the head to make hearts melt. All the girls will scream. Real men wear kilts. Real men wear kilts. Put a bonnet on your head, a kilt on your knees. She's gonna say that you look sexy. You'll turn the head to make hearts melt. All the girls will scream. Real men wear kilts.
We're getting a liquor store.
Yeah, we're going to be getting. I'm going to also reveal how many liquor stores. We're
oh, okay.
Be an ordinance was read Tuesday night, City Hall, for the first time, the first reading. There are some typos that they discovered during the reading of the ordinance. Of course, that's normal. Let's see. The retail package dealers shall not engage in the sale of malt beverages. The sale of malt beverages or wine, except between the hours of 7 a.m. and 1 a.m. Mondays through Fridays, and 7 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Saturdays, and on Sundays after 12:30 p.m. until 11:30 p.m. on Sundays. Advertising, they pretty much have the same advertising restrictions as any business, except you cannot advertise price. You can advertise the location, the name of the business, all that kind of stuff. Be participants in any immoral conduct while you're operating the liquor store. Let's see.
Can you give away free samples?
No. Cannot. There's no consumption on the premises. No holder of a license, only for the package sales of any alcoholic beverage, nor any employee, agent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, shall knowingly allow or permit the breaking of any package containing any alcoholic beverages. Now, if you've got a flask in your hip pocket you've been carrying around and you want to take a sip, I don't know if they could stop you from doing that.
This is only in the city limits of Ringo.
Only in the city limits of Ringo. They're required to have security cameras that I think can be accessed by the police. And they have to allow the police and public officials access to the store at any time they want.
Who it's going to be?
Well, I'm getting there. I'm building up.
Excuse me.
I'm building to a crescendo here.
It's the old newspaper guy kicking in. Answer the question, sir.
No, but this is radio. Okay, so anyway, the building has to be 4,000 square feet or more. They must have $300,000 in inventory. They shall not have a drive-in window. The interior lighting shall be fluorescent or LED.
Gee, what?
I don't know. The building shall follow all current City of Ringo facade ordinances. Facade, as some people pronounce it, facades. Okay, 80% of the building, the front of the building must be plate glass.
What? Which
I guess because they don't want who are you?
I want you to be able to look in and see what's going on.
Yeah. Must meet international building code. Premises shall be so lighted that the interior is visible day and night.
What is the reason that you are not supposed to advertise price? I don't understand. What's the negative? What's the downside of that?
Ordinance does not explain that.
Ah, all right.
Now, the license required to sell alcohol beverages talks about that. Now, get down to your point, Reaver.
Okay. All right.
Distilled spirits package retail establishment. There shall be no more than 2 issued licenses for a distilled spirits package retail establishment. 1 license for placement in the 350 zone, and 1 license for placement in the 348 zone.
Where are those zones?
I do not know. I'm assuming there's a zoning map of the city somewhere. I didn't look that up. Unless further approved by council and designated the zone of placement in which the license can be established. Distilled spirits package retail establishments by approved special use license are allowed in zoning area C1, C2, and C3. Prohibited locations, of course, they're talking about you can't be across the street from a school, you can't be next door to a church, you can't be next to a a 300 housing unit, housing authority law. If you're part of the housing authority, you can't put one on Guiler Street next to the housing authority. That's basically what they're saying. okay. Well, I mean, that's what it says. You know, I'm not making this stuff up. There's some other things. There's several pages here.
Does it say how many people have applied?
No, because the ordinance hadn't passed yet. So the scuttlebutt rumor is that it will be by lottery. They will establish a date when they will accept license applications, a date that license applications will no longer be allowed, and whoever's applied then that meets the requirements, if there's more than two that meet the requirements, then they will have a lottery. And I guess they'll be like the draft. They'll put the things in a bowl, and somebody will reach in and pull it out. There'll be two pulled out. I don't know how that's going to work. So anyway, that's the city ordinance.
Well, does the scuttlebutt indicate whether there are people clamoring to open up?
They are getting calls from everywhere. They're not just people in Catoosa County, but there are liquor store operators in Chattanooga that would like to open up a liquor store in Ringo. So it's not
Would they let them do that?
Well, why not? It's free. It's free country.
This is Ringo, remember?
That's right. Oh, well. Yeah, I wasn't going to go there.
Well, okay.
You can go there if you want.
The liquor stores in Chattanooga would have an advantage because they could put in a wider variety of product than a local guy could afford to put in.
Well, they've already developed relationships with all these suppliers. It takes a while to develop a relationship with suppliers. You're right, Colonel. They've got a competitive advantage if they choose to use it. All right. Well, that was the final bit of local news that I had.
They would save themselves a lot of trouble if they would limit the size of the bottle they sell. If you start selling half pints, you're going to have a bunch of drunks come in and buy them. If you restrict what you sell to a fifth, the drunks and the vagrants and so on can't afford to pay for a fifth. And so you save yourself a lot of trouble.
I have an article from the English Churchman, Friday the 14th of January edition, which is tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've got the early edition. Asher's Bakery wins again. This is from our English Churchman, Friday 14th of January 2022.
I wonder who's financing that guy.
No, this is not an American case. This is a case out of Great Britain.
Okay.
And it's the European Court of Human Rights has upheld the ruling of the United Kingdom Supreme Court in the Asher's Bakery case. In 2014, now get this, this is a guy that has a bakery.
That was 8 years ago.
And this has been going on for 8 years. In 2014, Gareth Lee sued the Belfast based, this is out of Ireland, Belfast-based family-owned business after they refused to put a gay rights campaign slogan on a cake. Lee wanted the words "support gay marriage" iced on the cake. The MacArthurs refused on grounds that it went against their Christian religious convictions. Lee filed a discrimination lawsuit against the bakery after the Equality Commission for Northern Ireland found in his favor. Later, a county court upheld Lee's complaint in a civil suit and fined the bakery £500 in damages. Owners of the bakery, David and Amy MacArthur, appealed the case and lost. The Court of Appeals ruled that it was a case of direct discrimination. The court then appealed, the couple then appealed to the United Kingdom Supreme Court with the support of the Attorney General of Northern Ireland. The United Kingdom Supreme Court found unanimously in favor of the MacArthurs in 2018. In 2019, Lee's lawyers filed an appeal to the European Court of Human Rights. The European Court of Human Rights dismissed the case on the 6th of January, that's last week, bringing the matter to an end. The Christian Institute provided legal support for the MacArthurs and summarized the Supreme Court ruling this way. 1. The issue was about the message, not the messenger. Number 2. Equality law does not compel people to say something with which they profoundly disagree. Number 3. There was no discrimination on grounds of sexual orientation. Number 4. There was no discrimination on grounds of religious belief or political opinion. Number 5. The objection was to being required to promote the message on the cake. And number 6. The less favorable treatment was afforded to the message, not to the man. And it goes on.
I got a question. I thought that that England now, the Great Britain, was not in the European Union anymore. And why would a trial, or why would a case that had been decided by basically the Supreme Court of Great Britain go to the European Union for as a higher court? I mean, it looked to me like that.
Yeah, but this was filed in 2019 before they left.
Okay.
So they had taken jurisdiction, which it's interesting that the European lefties have a greater appreciation for religious freedom than the Supreme Court of the United States. Think about that. The European Union said, yes, if you want to operate a bakery and you don't want to put some kind of message that's against your belief, you don't have to do it. It seems so basic an idea. And why we don't believe that, I don't know.
Well, a basic idea. One of the basic ideas is if you own a business and pay the taxes, you ought to be able to serve whoever you want.
That's right.
Well, that's been turned upside down in the United States the last 50 years.
Well, anyway, I think that's interesting news. I think it's good news for the faithful. And next week, we'll talk about an article, because the paper doesn't come out again for another 3 weeks. About Desmond Tutu, who should have been wearing a tutu all of his life. There is an article in here about a nurse who was wearing a cross, and we could talk about that, I guess, or read some of that article. But I have monopolized too much of the show tonight, so I think someone else needs to speak and say something of some importance.
I don't know if the Colonel can give some history, or I can talk
great.
About, I've got a real interesting book that I've been reading. My son, who works for the company, one of my sons who works for the company where I retired from, had a colleague in California that worked with him, and I'd met him, real nice guy. He used to be president of the American Society of Civil Engineers, and he was working for our firm, and my son, well, I don't know how the topic came up. Maybe he was telling me he was trying to find a book for me for Christmas, but He said, I recommend you get this book right here and read it. So it came on his recommendation, and and I'm about 80% through. And it is really an interesting book. It's the title of it is Rising Tide, The Great Mississippi Flood of 1927 and How It Changed America. And you got to remember, back in 1927, the understanding of how floods occurred and how water flowed and all of those technical issues were still being worked out. They did not know the things we know today. And anyway, it talks about what happened, and I don't know if anybody in here knows what happened in 1927, but we had a monster of a flood in 1927, and it flooded South Dakota, Missouri, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and you just come on down. Kentucky, of course, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas. It was a tremendous flood, and I think it's over 500,000 people were homeless and lost their job, and just it just devastated the whole center of the country. And, you know, there was all this argument in the beginning about how do you control the Mississippi from flooding? And there were people who thought, well, we just want to put in levees. That's all we're going to do. Because if you put in levees, and as the water rises, the velocity will increase, and it'll scour out the bottom and actually create a larger cross-section, and you can pass more water. No, it don't work exactly like that. And then others believed we ought to have spillways, and others believed we ought to have these off-site reservoirs and all these things. But back in the early days, the Corps of Engineers, who were in charge, settled on the idea of levees only. And basically, the flood of 1927 proved that that was not what needed to be done. The flood started up in the upper reaches of the Mississippi and Missouri River, and flooded places in Dakotas, and in Pennsylvania. The Ohio River flooded. Actually, the Ohio River flowed backwards for a while. The Tennessee Valley was flooded. All the rivers in Arkansas were flooded. And Kentucky was flooded. But when it got down to Cairo, that's Cairo, Illinois, just before you get down into Tennessee and Missouri, and they had levees that had broken, the levees started failing. And they started failing. As it just came down, it just wiped out. And it gave a description of what it was like, a wall of water that was 30 or 40 feet high, and it would go for 70 miles. It'd be like having a flood on the Altoona River, and it flooded Ringgold. That's how far away that some of the flooding occurred. And, of course, a lot of people didn't get any warning. And, of course, it wiped their house away and wiped them away. Told stories about, of course, the plantation owners took all their workers off the plantation and put them on the levee and helped them to raise the levee height with sandbags and all that kind of stuff. And there's one story about, and the way they did that is they did it by gunpoint. If you were black and you were anywhere along the line of the Mississippi River in any town, the police collected you if you were white, a black male, and put you on the levee. And you had guards over you, watching you, making you fill sandbags. It was terrible. And they told a story about they had a small breach that was probably only a few feet wide, a few feet deep, and they ran over to fix it, and as soon as they could throw a sandbag in it, it'd wash out. And by this time, the levee is quivering. Now, we're talking about a levee that's 35 to 40 feet high, and the base width of it is like 150 feet. I mean, we're talking a big embankment, and you're standing on top of it, and it's quivering. And these guys were scared to death, and they were trying to fill in the levee, and finally it just broke, and it took 100 of those workers, and just whoop, they were gone. Anyway, and it told the story about what happened. And one of the more interesting things was what happened in New Orleans. I'll be quick because we've got our guests coming up. But in New Orleans, the people in New Orleans were scared to death it was going to flood New Orleans. So they went down to Plaquemines and St. Bernard Parish downstream and said, well, we're going to take dynamite and blow the levees up along St. Bernard to relieve New Orleans. And they said, you can't do that. You'll flood us. And so, anyway, the politicians all got together and talked them into doing it. And they flooded, they breached the levee, and then they promised them that they would repay them for damages. And after the flood was over, New Orleans got together with all their lawyers and fought the case and basically didn't pay them much of anything. So, anyway, it's a real interesting story. When I get through with it, I'll finish it.
You know, you talked about the Corps of Engineers. West Point was not formed in order to make officers for the infantry, artillery, and so on. West Point was formed in order to teach engineers to join the Corps of Engineers.
That's correct.
If you're not smart enough to be in the Corps of Engineers, you wind up in the artillery
and
the infantry.
That's right.
And the cavalry.
The top graduates of West Point got their choice if they wanted to go into the Corps. Yep. And, of course, most of them didn't. Robert E. Lee, that's where he started his career in the Corps. You're right. And in the early stages, the West Point was the school of engineering for our country.
Correct.
And
that's why it's so heavy on mathematics.
Right. And that's where all of these policies came from. But anyway, it's an interesting story, and I'll share later, but it's what made Herbert Hoover president of the United States. And I'll tell you all how that happened next time.
Well, this flood is interesting because the flood of around 1812 was the result of the earthquake developed Rule Foot Lake.
Right, and at Memphis and up in that area, that's right.
Yeah, and that's the one time that the Mississippi River ran backward in order to fill the Rule Foot Lake.
Well, anyway, as a result of this 1927 flood, a lot of changes were made, and a lot of people were mistreated. And it ended up, nothing changes. You know, you look at this and you think about what's going on today, it's the same sort of thing happening then that's happening now.
Next time, guys.
Next time.
Yeah, we got a special guest in. I believe his name is Mitchell Horner. Going around the table, I'm Richard. I've talked to Bill Clark, Phil Krantz, Martin Bandy, Maurice Bandy, and Marshall Bandy. Those three stooges, you know, whatever. All right, you're running for state representative for District 3, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct. My name is Mitchell Horner, and I'll just introduce myself real quick. I'm running for State House District 3. Right now, no one's announced themselves against me, which is perfectly fine. And I'm looking forward to y'all's questions today.
Well, let's just start out with, what is your business? What do you do?
Yes, sir. I actually have three businesses.
Wow.
yes, sir. One of my businesses is called Rolling Video Games, and you can look it up. It's a really cool idea of basically putting video games in trailers and selling it to business owners to basically go around town and do parties. We build about 5 of those a month, and we have about 100 across the country. And it's really taken off. We do financing, and it's a really cool idea. The second business is actually a pontoon manufacturing. We build 24-foot pontoon boats with slides and trampolines, and it's just real fun on the lake. And then lastly, we build expedition trailers, basically small trailers that you can take off-road and go anywhere with. So it's perfect bug-out vehicle.
All right, married, children?
Yes, sir. I'm married to a beautiful wife named Roxanne, and I have two beautiful children, a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old, Emerald and Maddie.
And church? You don't have to answer that one if you don't want to.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't have a current church. My dad was a pastor for about 5 years at a place called Ashland Terrace Baptist Church in Hickson.
Yeah.
He quit being a pastor about 6 months ago and haven't found one since.
Okay. All right. And why do you want to be state representative?
I'm running specifically because my child, Emerald, went into the public school system. And the experience has been eye-opening, to say the least. Unfortunately, because of COVID, a lot of it is either online or through an iPad. And unfortunately, the system is broken. And I'm not blaming the teachers at all. It's not the teachers or the institution's fault. It's the state government, in my opinion, and the way that they basically over-administer everything. And I'm running specifically to... for school vouchers. I'm running to reduce the income tax and eventually get rid of the income tax, because I can see the difference between Catoosa County and Hamilton County, and the changes in my business have been astronomical due to the state income tax, because I can't use those funds into my business anymore. And then lastly, is I'm running for constitutional carry.
Okay. That's the questions I got. Anybody else?
Yeah, I've got a question. What was the experience that you say that your child had in the public school that apparently you were dissatisfied with?
Yes, sir. So the main issue was just watching the COVID guidelines, and then also the curriculum that they teach. Their curriculum that they teach is almost 50 to 60% on digital devices. And I can just see a remarkable difference in her learning from when I taught her just books, paper, and through other ways, and seeing her change in education now.
Was the subject matter something that concerned you, or it was mainly just the method of teaching?
It's just mainly the way that they're taught. It's just the way the teachers are forced to teach.
If you do away with the income tax, how would you make up for the deficit?
Yes, sir. So the main issue is, of course, we can't just immediately get rid of the income tax, unfortunately. But because of Medicaid and the education budget, and I'm not one for just slashing the Medicaid or the education budget. I would to answer your question, I would get rid of the income tax gradually. First, we can get rid of the corporate income tax completely, in my opinion, directly, just out of the surplus that we have. Right now, our state, it's called a rainy day fund, is capped out because that's federal requirements. And so it's capped out, and that fund is based, I think they took in an extra $1 billion this year alone in 2020. So those funds cannot go into that rainy day fund. So that means that they have to either give that money back to the people, which I'm all for, or they have to spend it. And we know our state budget, unfortunately, they are most likely going to spend it on new programs or new ideas or in some manner of Atlanta decision-making. So one, we can eliminate the corporate income tax just out of that surplus alone. Gradually, I'm for reducing the income tax in replacement of our current sales tax rate going up from our current rate of 4% to 6%. And if we cap all spending, I think I'm away from the microphone. If I cap all spending from here on for 30 years, let's just say we cap it at our current rate of 0% growth. That means we just use the programs that we have now. Even if we cap it at a 1.1% growth rate, over time, that income will be completely made up for. It's just about capping and making sure we live inside our means.
Anybody else?
Well, I think I know the answer to this, but the incumbent in this race, he's not running again, obviously. Who are you replacing? Who would you be replacing as a state rep?
Currently, Hill is our current state rep, and he has not announced, so I'm neither for or against him. He has not announced, and so no one has shown interest in this seat yet. If they are, I'm ready for a good fight. I do believe I am the best qualified candidate based on my my life and my experience.
And I'm guessing that you're running as a Republican.
Yes, sir. That's correct. Absolutely. I was actually a part of our wonderful GOP. We meet every Monday at 6 o'clock at Farm to Fork, so please come. I was a precinct chair of the Ringgold precinct, elected the last convention, and I was there every meeting for about 8 months. Then we did the TAD. We fought the TAD. We were the chairman of the against the tax allocation district, and me and a couple of guys were able to fight that and win in a landslide, 5,000 to 800 votes. And then I decided to run for the seat. I resigned my spot as precinct chair and decided to run for state house.
Yeah, I was fixing this. You did work considerably for the defeat of that.
Yes, sir. I was the chairman. And then Nick Ware was underneath us doing a lot of the legwork. So I really want to thank Nick Ware on that.
Wasn't Nick the one that came in and talked to us about that?
Yes, sir.
He was.
Yeah.
What's your educational background?
So, education-wise, my parents were actually missionaries to Israel when I was in middle school. So I was born and raised here, and I went to actually Ringgold Primary School, where my kid goes now. And then we moved to Israel when I was in middle school for 3 years. And it was kind of a mix there of homeschool and being in that public school system and seeing the let's say the challenges there. And then we moved back here, and that's when we my parents decided to homeschool me. So I was thankfully homeschooled and was able to really study my passions, which is policy. I'm a big policy nut, and I did a mock trial in the homeschool community. So I graduated in 2012, and then I went to Dalton State for a history degree. And 2 years in, I saw that they were not teaching it to the standard that I knew. I was paying for nothing, basically. I was not receiving almost any education on history that I had already known. Basically, I was just paying for something I could have done at home, and I choose not to pay for a piece of paper. So I left Dalton, and that's when I went into business.
So your parents were missionaries to Israel?
Yes, sir. We actually lived right outside Jerusalem. It's a little community called Pisgah Ze'ev.
Good.
Well, what was your recollection of that experience in Israel? Did you look at it as a difficult time, or was it an enjoyable time?
Honestly, I miss it terribly. I remember it very fondly. I remember a lot of my good friends I made over there, and I do miss it. It was challenging because.
Did you speak English over there, or did you have to learn another language?
Unfortunately, I was a middle schooler who did not understand the value of a second language, and so I fought tooth and nail to learn Hebrew. I wish I had learned more, but I can read it. I can't understand it. And
so, are you telling me you can get the original Hebrew scripture out and open it up and read it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's a really.
I'm a little rusty, but I can.
There's a lot of people that go to the seminary that can't do that.
it's definitely very. It's kind of changed my mind a little bit. What I mean by that, it evolved my mind because they write left to right, and so I can read left to right, and it really does change your perception, especially from a foreign policy. I love foreign policy is my true passion, and from a foreign policy standpoint, it really does change a lot. But to go back to your original question, yeah, I did see it as a challenging time, too, because I can actually remember in middle school being persecuted for my faith. For 3 years, basically, you have to choose a community. They say it's freedom of religion, but it's really not, unfortunately. It's really about being in your religious clique. And so the biggest click over there is Orthodox, Jewish Orthodox. And then the second one is, of course, Islam. And then the third one, the much smaller one, is Christianity. And Christianity is, of course, divided into its denominations. But really, over there, it's just one click. You're seen as basically a crusader. And so you're actually an interesting little tidbit that y'all find interesting. In Hebrew, I mean, in Israel, they actually pronounce, in English, it's J-E-S-U-S, Jesus. But in Israel, they pronounce it Jesus. Not Yeshua. Yeshua meaning salvation in Hebrew. Jesus, which can be written in the same English form, means may his name be forgotten. And so it's a very different state of mind. You're challenged on your faith almost every day. And you're beaten up for your faith. You're discriminated for your faith. So it's a very different mindset. I remember my dad was threatened many times over there. So it really did make you grow up very fast. But it also made you realize the value of certain freedoms.
Tori, you got something?
Well, I thought I did.
Okay. What'd you do?
I was going to ask him what his worldview was, because he said he was a great policy wonk.
Yeah. Yes,
and
sir.
Had a lot of ideas about policy. But it's been my experience that libertarians are great policy wonks, but have no faith and have no Christian worldview or Judeo-Christian ethic. But I think he, based on his answers to those questions, I don't have to ask him that. That's a.
I'm curious. You were explaining your first business, or the first business you described, and I have no idea what you were talking about. is there a way you could make it simpler?
Absolutely. So basically, we build trailers, like enclosed trailers, and then we put video games and TVs in them so people can come into this clean environment. And COVID has actually, I hate to say it in a bad light, but it actually did benefit us, because it's a clean environment that people can have parties in that we can sanitize every single time. So they come into the trailer, they have fun, they have a party, and we sell these directly to business owners across the country. And so people can have their own little business going around their city having kid parties.
Oh, this is for not adults, but children.
Yes, sir. It's so like children, almost, truly, honestly, all ages. All ages.
So is really it like an arcade sort of a thing?
Sort of, but for like Xboxes and PlayStation, so they can just sit there.
Okay.
And especially in like cities where a lot of people don't have access still to Wi-Fi, surprisingly, they can come by and just play and have fun. And
These are sponsored by the corporations that buy the units.
Yes, sir. And it's not really corporations, actually a lot of small business owners.
Small business. Well.
Because we can actually finance them ourselves. So for about $12,000, $15,000, somebody can get into business for themselves and be completely self-sustaining.
And are these children charged to come in and play?
Their parents are. So the parents say, get on our website, they book a page, and they book a party event. They go by there on Monday or Tuesday, they have some fun, and then they get paid $300 for that one day of operation.
I see. So you got
how big are these trailers?
They are 32 foot, sir.
Okay.
32 feet long and how wide?
8.5 foot wide.
8.5 feet wide. Well, that's an interesting. Yeah. It's an interesting way. There's all kinds of ways to make a buck in this world.
Exactly.
That's right.
Luckily, I worked with a couple of good owners who are very entrepreneurial.
Unfortunately, the courthouse only knows how to make money one way, and that's to feed at the public trough. And so this will be a breath of fresh air, which they may or may not enjoy.
They probably won't enjoy me, sir.
So when did you first get interested in politics?
When I was 18, I loved foreign policy. So I actually, that was during the Syrian Civil War. That was the first year of it, really. And it's a funny story. This is how I really fell in love with the American system. Is I go up to Washington, D.C., and it was a whole advocacy group. All advocacy groups for Syria met in this small room, maybe 40 people, but it was people representing the Syrian parliament in Syria, is the people representing the various factions that were all coming together to push for funding to support their for like health and food and other things during the Civil War to the American government. And by pure chance, I was the only one from the South to show up. So they were like, wow, well, thanks for showing up. And they gave me a Senate briefing to where I could go around and actually meet senators and congressmen, and they didn't realize they were sending me alone. So I would go around for a whole day meeting senators and congressmen, Mr. Graves and Isaacson and their staff, and pitching for Syrian support. And the entire time, they're not realizing it's just me. So they come to me and like, wow, y'all have been great. Wait, where is everybody? I was like, it's just me. And they're like, it's just you. And I was like, who told you to do that? I was like, you did. And it's like, oh, great. Well, here's somebody to help you, but keep going. So it was really fun. It was eye-opening, though, because I bring to them almost three or four representatives and a couple of senators actually signed a letter to the president saying, we support this. Please do something about this. And I bring this to the group, and they go, wow, that's wonderful. Oh, wait, there's R's by these names. And I'm like, yeah, they're Republicans. What do you expect? They're from the South. And they go, no, we don't want their support. And that's when I was like, I washed my hands up. And I was like, when you are so politicized that you can't ask for help, it definitely was an eye-opener. And so I realized the first underbellies of the American system as well in the Congress, unfortunately. But it was a fun experience, and it's still a fun story.
All right. You got a website or a phone number or something where people can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. You can find me on Facebook at Mitchell for State House or my website at MitchellForStateHouse.com.
Now, are you the one that has the signs out that says Mitchell something?
Mitchell Warner, yes, sir.
Okay, so you're the one that got the signs out. Okay, I wonder who that was.
Luckily, this group of guys behind me, Matthew and Gavin, have been wonderful at putting them out.
Well, now, I noticed these two fellows here how are you connected with them?
Absolutely. So Gavin is my campaign manager, and Matthew's just somebody that comes around and helps me, and I'm very thankful for.
Okay.
All right. Last statement before we let you go.
Just thank you for your time. Thank you for calling me. It was very appreciative for y'all reaching out. I really support it, and please vote for me.
All right. Thank you for being here.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Nice to meet you. Glad you came.
All right. We'll be right back.
It's nice meeting you. Thank you.
Then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush me, Bugle, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, by the rising. All of Kintyre, oh mist rolling in from the sea. My desire is always to be, oh Mall of Kintyre. Far have I traveled, and much have I seen. Dark distant mountains with valleys of green, past painted deserts, the sun sets on fire as she carries me home to the Mall of Kintyre. Mall of Kintyre, oh mist rolling in from my desire is always to be here, oh Mall of Kintyre. Sweep through the heather like deer in the glen, carry me back to the days I knew then, nights when we sang like a heavenly choir of the life and the times of the Mall of Kintyre.
We got about 10 minutes left, guys. What's
well, up? I have a really nice, but go ahead. You got some, history. Yeah.
Yeah. Coming right here on the last part of it, you know, people that weren't raised on a farm really missed a whole lot in a number of different directions. And one of the things is the pets you managed to have. I had three dogs that just followed me around everywhere I went. And then we had a sow that had a litter of pigs, and they all died except one. And I took that pig, a female, and fed it on a bottle, and then I fed it as it grew up, and it followed me around just like a dog. So everywhere you saw Bill, you saw three dogs and a pig. And
it, how old were you when this happened?
About 14.
Okay.
About 14. 15, maybe.
Yeah.
And it followed me everywhere I went. I mean, I could drive in the truck, and I drove at 14 or 15. And it would stand up in the seat and look out the window just like, just like a dog. It loved to be rubbed on the belly, and so everywhere you saw me, you saw three dogs and a pig.
Well, did the pig, every time you passed a mud hole, go jump in the mud hole?
No, pig is just as clean as it could be. If you give a pig a chance, he'll stay clean. Well, you know, time went on, and pig got bigger and bigger and bigger, and got up to about 150 pounds. And it was my mother's time to have the garden club. And she spent 3 days getting everything cleaned up and absolutely spotless and in its place in order to entertain the ladies of the garden club. And when the day arrived, she wanted me to come say hello to the ladies, so I did. So I walked up the back porch, through the kitchen, and through the dining room, and into the living room, and I said, "Hello, ladies. How are you all?" "Fine, fine, fine." And then I went on out the front porch, and I got to the bottom of the steps, and I heard these screams and peals of laughter. This pig had come up the back steps, through the kitchen, through the dining room, and sit there at the living room licking and saying hello to the ladies. It's like kind of grunting. Oh, my mother, bless her heart, she could have died. Absolutely died. There wasn't a hole big enough to hold her. She was teased about this for months and months. Needless to say, fairly soon thereafter, my pet pig disappeared. And I never asked what happened to it. I didn't want to learn. It just kind of went away. When you're not raised on a farm, you miss a whole lot.
Ronnie Spector from the Ronettes died yesterday.
Who's Ronnie Spector?
She was the lead singer of the iconic girls group from the 60s, the Ronettes.
Yeah, what about her? She passed away. Is that what you said?
Yeah, 78.
Yeah, that's what I heard. The Jersey Boys are coming to Memorial Auditorium. I guess, I don't know if it's this weekend. It's soon. And so if you like that, Frankie Valli and the, what's the name of them? The Frankie Valli?
Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
And the Four Seasons. That's what it's about. It's that music.
It was a good play.
And so they're going to be at the Memorial Auditorium here. I'm assuming that's like 60s.
Yes.
Yeah, that ought to be good.
Well, do you want to do one story or you ready to end this thing?
Whenever you want, I don't care.
Well, we can do one little story from the English Churchman. It is the editorial written by our spiritual advisor, Mr. Reverend Christopher Pierce, who lives in Northern Ireland right now and is the editor of the English Churchman. And it says, what if
he were known as swindler, idolater, drunkard, or slanderer. And this is what he has to say. And if I can get my glasses out, I might even be able to read it. It's in such small print because the PDF had to fit the printer. At some point or another, we've all received news we found hard to comprehend. Last week, Lambeth Palace, wary Orthodox Anglicans who thought they had heard every ridiculous ecclesiastical thing under the sun, heard something more bizarre than anything before. What was this piece of information? It was that Mr. Stephen Knott, K-N-O-T-T, had been named Senior Appointments Secretary to both archbishops. For those not in the know, Mr. Knott is an ecclesiastical bureaucrat at Lambeth Palace. He has been there in one capacity or another since 2013. It isn't news that people move up in ecclesiastical bureaucratic ladders, but it is to be expected. What makes Mr. Knott's appointment particularly newsworthy is that he is to be made the gatekeeper for all bishops, deans, and other senior roles within the Church of England. He is a male in a same-sex marriage with the very modern Major General Alistair Bruce, Governor of Edinburgh Castle. Mr. Knott and Major General's marriage would not have been allowed in the Church of England. The ceremony received considerable press coverage that last July, as it was presided over by the Bishop of Edinburgh of the Scottish Episcopal Church. Some, but likely very few of you, may be wondering why we would utilize this space to comment on the matter. Actually, it is pretty straightforward. When the Apostle Paul wrote to the Corinthians in the 5th chapter of his first epistle, he had to address the very awkward situation of sexual immorality within the congregation. It seems a man had married his stepmother. Paul told the Corinthians that was so out of line that not even the pagans would do such a thing. Then he told them to expel him from the fellowship until he repented. The apostle took church discipline very seriously and expected the church to do likewise. Which brings us to the knotty, I think that's interesting he used the word knotty, situation with Mr. Knott. Later in the same chapter, the Apostle Paul details how seriously they were to take immorality within their fellowship. From verse 9, he commands, I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people, not at all meaning the people of this world who are immoral, or the greedy and swindlers, or idolaters. In that case, you would have to leave this world. But now I am writing to you that you must not associate with anyone who claims to be a brother or sister, but is sexually immoral or greedy, or idolater, or slanderer, a drunkard, or swindler. Do not even eat with such people. As holders of offices in the apostolic succession, you'd think they would follow apostolic teaching. Would they have appointed a known swindler, idolater, drunkard, or slanderer? Where do they find an exception clause? How do they justify putting someone into a senior decision-making post who is apostolically excluded from Christian fellowship, let alone provincial management, because of his behavior? Can you imagine the Apostle Paul's response if the letters to the Corinthian church had tried such a thing? We need to pray more for the archbishops. We know they have a tough job, but their shocking lack of biblical fidelity in this situation is cause for concern
at every level of the church, they need to repent and mind the apostolic instructions. That is the editorial from Reverend Christopher Pierce.
How many archbishops are there?
There's a lot. Archbishop is not, you know, I'm not quite sure. There's archbishops over this and archbishops over that, and there's an archbishop in the Caribbean, and there's archbishop in Antigua, and, you know, I don't understand what their organizational setup is. It is hierarchical. You can follow the steps up through the food chain up to the top. So,
well, do you have
any of that going on at your Presbyterian church in Brainerd?
In where?
Not that
I'm aware of.
Yeah, I'm just joking.
Is it going to snow?
Sunday.
Is that what's going to happen?
That's what they said.
Really?
Yeah.
Much accumulation?
They don't know.
They don't know.
Depends how the storm tracks.
Well, Black Dog, what will you do? Will you survive snow okay?
Snow doesn't bother me.
It doesn't?
Just storms.
Okay, well, good.
You know, snow, if it snows outside, I'll just roll over and go back to bed and wait for it to melt. Just remember, make sure you go to Walmart the day before and
stock up on bread, milk, eggs,
and toilet paper. For some reason, when there's a snowstorm, everybody buys up toilet paper.
But you got to remember, that pine tree behind your house, when the snow really loads it down and it falls down, goes right, bisects your house in half, then you'll be more worried about the snow.
I don't have trees by my house, thank you. I cut them all down.
Okay.
So.
Well, just remember this. If you run low on toilet paper, just go around to these boxes that have the Catoosa County News in them and pull out the Marjorie Greene article.
Yeah. It's interesting when it snows, people go buy a gallon of milk, a dozen eggs, and a whole case of toilet paper.
Yeah. I've never quite figured out. I can understand the milk, the bread, and the eggs, but what do you need 24 rolls of toilet paper if it's going to snow 3 inches? Unless they plan on lighting it on fire to keep warm if the power goes out.
Well, you should have been here. When was it? 93?
Yeah. Yeah.
We got 2 feet of snow.
Yeah.
Two
I
feet.
Dealt with 2 feet of snow.
I know.
But up in Chicago.
Not in the south.
It's not a big deal.
We were without power for seven days.
Well, that would be a big deal.
7 days.
It was a big deal down here. Yeah.
Anyway.
They closed the interstate.
That's when you just stay home and just roll over and.
No,
just
I had
to
a
sleep.
Newspaper get out.
It was like camping. It was like camping out in the snow, and it got down to what? Below zero, way below zero.
Oh, yeah, it did. It got cold.
Oh, it's
cold. The Baptist church opened up and went out on 75 and brought people in.
That's good.
Took care of them.
Yeah.
That was a good thing. There were some great things that happened to people as a result
of
that.
All right, we got to go. School prayer. Isaiah 54, verse 13. All your children shall be taught by the Lord, and great shall be the peace of your children.
Romans 10:17. So faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ.
John 4:24. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth.
Matthew 19:14. But Jesus said, let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them. For to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. Exodus chapter 3, verse 4. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am.
Acts chapter 17 and verse 11. Now these Jews were more noble than those in Thessalonica. They received the word with all eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see if these things were so.
And as is our custom, at the end of each show, we read from 2 Chronicles 7:14, which reads as follows. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray, and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, and will forgive their sin, and will heal their land.
Be safe, be good, shop Ringo, read your Bible every day, and pray for our country.